Welcome to On the Brink Radio. We've got Tony Story coming at us from Aotea, Great Barrier Island, New Zealand, about 100 kilometers east of Auckland, my home away from home and my very favorite place in Down Under, a very beautiful island and relatively undisrupted, even by the standards of, as they say, 100% clean and green New Zealand. But Tony, tell us exactly what's been going on there. We've known each other for many years, but we've got in touch in the past few weeks because of a very dangerous environmental scenario unfolding there. Tell us about that.
Well, Jeff, thank you for letting me come on your show. It was probably about 6 or 8 weeks ago we found out that the Department of Conservation here on Aotea Great Barrier Island were planning to rid a small island just off the east coast of the main island here, Aotea. It's roughly about 2 to 3 k's away. And they're going to dump quite a significant amount of Brodificum. I think, in fact, it's actually 12 kilograms per hectare, and there's about 270 hectares. So we're obviously pretty concerned about that. We've recently had a petition going. You might have seen that on the news. You may not have. On the mainstream news, lamestream. And we had over 400 people of the adult population here on Great Barrier, which is over half of the adult population, who have signed the petition to stop the drop.
Yes, and did you tell me that you just handed it to the DOC people last week out on the island, on Rakitu Island?
Yeah, we went up to the dock office at Okiwi on Friday, and we handed over that petition, and they said that they would respond within 2 weeks, and we're still unsure what that response will be. We're hoping that they will review the drop, but we're not holding out any hope for that.
Well, my guess is that their response is going to be, thank you very much for caring. We've got this all under control. Please trust our superior scientific knowledge. All this has been thoroughly researched, and Brodificum as well as 1080 have been proven by our trusted scientists that absolutely has no adverse environmental or ecological effects for any living thing in the land or the sea except the evil rats that we want to kill.
Yeah. It was really interesting because we actually, after we gave Doc the petition, we headed out to Rakitu on the Friday afternoon with the TV1 cameraman and reporter, and we did a circumnavigation of the island, and it was really interesting to see the terrain of the island. There's a lot of really steep drop-offs, pinnacles. That's all this poison is going to have to run on. And the point being is that there's going to be a significant amount of poison going into the ocean. And as we know, it's very toxic to aquatic life. You only have to look on pubchem.org, I think it is. And it says it there, right there, that the scientists are saying that this is very harmful to the aquatic environment. And crayfish, scallops, mussels, parwa, they're all going to be uptaking Brodificum. And it could be under serious threat for a number of years in and around that area.
Absolutely. And as well as any fish, any marine mammals, any seals, anybody like that, all these poisons are... The history of pesticides is that they were originated from nerve gas in World War I. They were testing nerve gas on insects and saw that it killed them. So that was the birth of the whole industry. And as I was telling you before, Brodificum is based on bromine, and 1080, another nasty killer that's used extensively. New Zealand uses 90% that's manufactured in the world every year. The reason this stuff is banned in most other countries is because of its threat to human health. But both of these are particularly dangerous because they both consist, if you look at them at the molecular level, each one consists of 1080 is based on fluorine and Brodificum is based on bromine. These are both halogens in the halogen family of the periodic table. And these elements are toxic by themselves. And so this is another one of the myths that DOC puts out, is that these substances break down into something that's harmless. But that's complete bullshit, because the simplest it can break down into would be elemental fluorine or bromine, which are in themselves dangerous. And so I sent you the percentage of of the molecular weight of in 1080 it's 24.5% fluorine, and in Bredificum it's 15.3% bromine. So for every kilogram of Bredificum, you're going to have 153 grams of elemental bromine, and for every kilogram of 1080 you'll have 245 grams of fluorine, and all this stuff is just going straight into the environment. These elements cannot break down into anything simpler.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the thing with Bredificum, as we saw on Rangitoto back in 2009, where there was quite a significant number of seabirds and sea life washing up on neighboring shores. The Department of Conservation came out on a number of occasions and said it was just a coincidence that all of these deaths were occurring. Very little testing was done. I think there was only a few different species that were tested. And so we really, unfortunately, we just can't trust the Department of Conservation to do the right thing. So that is why we're undertaking a bit of people power. And it's just a sad thing that it has to come to this, Jeff, that we're not protected by the governments that are purported to be protecting the people Aotearoa.
I think we've known for decades that governments don't exist to protect anything except their own interests. They specialize in propaganda and public relations that convinces people that aren't really critical thinkers, believe all their bullshit, that, you know, that all the justifications and rationalizations for, you know, for nuking all these places with deadly poisons that are dangerous to human health, for all the astronomical military expenditures in the name of protecting people against some invisible evil enemy. But it's all a very elaborate crock. And you know, it's very interesting to me that in Hawaii, there's an island there called Lehua, L-E-H-U-A, which a few weeks ago they dropped a whole bunch of some other deadly poison to try to eradicate rats. And then there was reports over the next few days of many, many, many dead seabirds and fish washing up. And also five pilot whales beached themselves just about 5 days later. And, of course, there's no conclusive evidence. You can't prove that any certain thing caused anything. And I mean, that's basically true throughout the whole spectrum of scientific endeavor. And I have to share this with you.
Exactly, yeah. Just because there's no evidence or research doesn't mean that there's no negative impacts.
Exactly. And they go, oh, it was just a coincidence. Or another favorite thing that they like to say when whales and dolphins wash up is, it's a mystery illness. Scientists are baffled to understand what could have caused these whales to strand, even though there was a whole shitload of naval weapons testing or seismic testing for hydrocarbons going on, you know, not that far from where these strandings occur. So these organizations are highly paid and trained public relations propagandists. Yeah, it's very, very, I have to share this with you. I'll mention him by name because he's a friend, a guy that we both know, a supposed environmentalist there on the island named John Ogden. Well, a few days ago, I interviewed him on my show a couple of years ago. He specializes in trees and he works with birds and stuff there. But as we both know, he's pretty much pro-pesticide. And he emailed me a few days ago complaining that because I put a link in a blog posting that I did a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned this thing with Rokitu, and I showed an article that said it was believed that possible that a bunch of dead penguins were killed by the Bredificum drop. And he goes like, Jeff, you should really get your facts straight before you spread this emotive claptrap. That's what he called it. Because he goes like, oh, there's no proof that that this poison killed the penguins.
It's a common use of pro-poisoners is to lay down the you're showing too many emotions. You're emotive.
People are showing
emotions because they're really pissed off at being poisoned. And do you blame them? We don't believe people who stand up like maybe John or people like John who stand up and read from the propaganda papers which the Department of Conservation and other government agencies are putting out.
Well, but check this out. After he said all that, I emailed him back and I said, like, John, are you so scientifically ignorant that you don't even understand the whole burden of proof thing and how you can't prove if somebody smoked cigarettes for 50 years and worked at the nuclear reactor and talked on their mobile phone and then they die of cancer, you still can't prove it. You can't prove anything, in that, but we have to use this thing that people used to have called common sense, and it's very uncommon these days. But the funny thing was, after I backlashed at him like that, he sent me another email the next day with his new email address so he could be sure to keep getting my emails.
Yeah. Well, not only common sense, but Jeff, you know, what about that thing that is slowly being closed down called intuition?
Absolutely.
You know, this is something we intuitively know that something, it's like the animals, the dogs, that, you know, they all know intuitively what is good and what is bad for them, what they need at a certain time. You know, as humans, we have had that part of our body system shut down in favor of people reading from scientific papers,
well,
which is really sad.
We've caused ourselves to mutate. We've domesticated and mutated ourselves from living in civilization for the past few thousand years. The indigenous people that are left and their way of life is much closer to what humanity is really supposed to be. But even though we call ourselves human, few of the people in today's world actually qualify as people in the traditional sense of what it's meant to be a person. And one of the things you're exactly talking about there. And there's another really quote, a really cool quote here. I believe it's from it's credited to a British guy named Edwin Burke, but it's the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing.
That's very true. Yeah. And also another thing that I've noticed from people who are pro-poison is that, in my observation, spending time close with them, they're so cerebral. They're coming from their intellect, where there doesn't seem to be any heart connection to what they're actually saying or feeling.
Yes.
In fact, I don't think they're feeling a lot from their heart. And it would be interesting, I don't know, if we could have some intuitive healers or seers to actually maybe do some experiments on these people, because maybe they are completely shut down in their heart chakra.
Well, that's a very good point. I think that they may not be permanently shut out of the heart chakra, but especially when they get on a certain mode, like a lot of these people, maybe not John anymore, but a lot of these people, this is their job, their highly paid job, to do all this stuff, to spread the poison, to spread the propaganda, to conduct the PR in favor of the pesticide.
Exactly.
We're finding
that problem here on Aotea. Because, as you know, there are a lot of people who are employed by Department of Conservation, who are employed by contractors, who are employed by other contractors who continually spray, say, Roundup and poison the rabbits, poison the rats. So they and their families cannot actually come out and say, they can't even sign the petition because
they might lose their job.
They are scared of losing their jobs.
Also, but would they rather lose their
mortgage?
Would they rather lose the possibility of having a healthy place to live for their grandkids and possibly their own health? That's exactly how stupid we are. But there's a couple other technical things I wanted to bring in here. My background's in science, and I've been researching this stuff really heavily. I learned about 1080 in the year 2000 from a marine biologist named Wade Doak. But ever since Clyde Graff came out with Poisoning Paradise in 2009, we were there on Great Barrier, and I created a new blog called Rachel's Carson of Today, and really have been bringing myself up today. But there's two things to consider that apply to any poison, herbicide or pesticide deployed into the environment. One's called the sublethal dose, and the other one's called bioaccumulation, and they're related. A sublethal dose is very important because an animal or a person could be receive a significant dose of a poison, but not be killed.
Absolutely.
But their health could be debilitated, and you may not even notice. It may have poisoned your liver or may be causing any number of degradations in your physiological and biomedical health. And an animal might be carrying around a burden of this poison. It might be destroying their health and at all different levels. You know, every organism responds differently, even to the same dose. And so, so you've got the sublethal poisoning that, like any, almost every, we've all got poison in our body. We've all got DDT, we've all got strontium 90, we've all got heavy metals and all different kinds of stuff to different degrees. And bioaccumulation is just the, logically what it sounds like, that as the years go by, every time you're exposed to this stuff, it builds up in your...
Our livers are so busy trying to get rid of all these environmental toxins.
Absolutely.
That sometimes, you know, they just don't have the job to actually keep us alive.
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
Why have so many people got problems with their thyroids? Why have so many people got problems with their immune systems? With immune system, I can't think of anything right now. But you know, there's a lot of these illnesses that there could be something else way in the background, just trying to quietly eating away.
Yes. Well, that's why it's really important to try to. I mean, we have to live in the world. You can't avoid all this stuff, but you can avoid poisoning yourself with the food you eat, because that's the main way people take in poison into their body. Like, we shouldn't be eating anything out of the ocean anywhere ever, not for decades, and especially not in the southern hemisphere after Fukushima, but also with all the pesticides, the heavy metal, the persistent organic pollutants. We shouldn't really be eating meat at all, because animals concentrate. I mean, this is just one reason to be a vegetarian, but any animal concentrates all this stuff in their tissue way more than plants do. But you can also take steps to cleanse your liver, like organic beetroot, celery, carrot, apple, and ginger juice, but it has to be certified organic. You make a juice with this stuff that dumps all the toxins out of your liver and kidneys, and drink a lot of water. If you do that every so often, you know, that helps to, because you're without your liver, you would just die of poisoning, because it cleans all the stuff out of your blood.
Yeah, and I guess you've also got to be careful about detoxing the liver too quickly too, because there's only so much that can be excreted via your blood, via your urine.
That's a good point. I've actually detoxed my liver so heavily from drinking like a liter of organic beetroot juice that it made me feel sick. And so what you've got to do, you've got to drink a lot of water when you're doing that, and sort of ride it out, you know. But the beetroot juice by itself, I mean,
it's clean water, Jeff. Clean water.
Absolutely, without Roundup in it. You know, that's another one. Glyphosate. I learned just a couple of weeks ago that it actually has been around since 1971, and that by a lot of estimates, 1.2 billion kilograms of Roundup has been deployed into the environment. But Monsanto specializes in bio-warfare weapons. They invented Agent Orange, the defoliant for Vietnam. They're behind the main research in genetic engineering, and which brings us to that interesting thing that you sent me about DARPA, the science fiction level Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency that specializes in weapon systems that people don't think could actually exist. They want to release genetically engineered rodents onto some of these islands, like in the Hiraki Gulf and other isolated places. But what kind of sense does that make, to release genetically engineered rodents into an environment where they want to get rid of the rodents?
Exactly. What's the end game here?
Well, I think it's for weapons testing. Any place that's an island, whether it's Australia, New Zealand, or these smaller islands, I think there's research agencies at the supranational levels of government and the shadow government.
Well, islands
are like laboratories.
Well, Jeff, islands make for good living laboratories.
Exactly. That's exactly, and I've really felt that in New Zealand. I think the whole thing with 1080, because of its fluorine content, the massive deployment of 1080, its net effect is going to be just like the fluoridation of drinking water. They're fluoridating the environment of New Zealand. And with Bradyficum, they're brominating it. That's another. I sent you a link to an article from a doctor that studies toxicity, and he said that 100% of all the patients he's tested show bromine toxicity in their body, because it's so widespread.
Yeah.
But yep. I mean, dude, it's worth organizing people and fighting to stop this stuff, because once it takes a few hours to drop all this stuff, but then the effects are going to persist for, like you said, years. Most of it's going to go straight into the ocean. The ocean currents can carry it all around the whole island, the whole east side of the island, all the dolphins and whales and the turtles
and
everybody.
Particularly around Rangitoto, because it is quite a unique place where it gets very deep very quickly. So, and there's obviously a lot of big currents. So we're anticipating probably within 6 km, it's going to be quite an intensively poisoned area.
Absolutely. Well, look, you know, there's something I'd like I'll help you with this. I mean, I wish I was there to be helping, but there's a lot I can do. It would be really good if we were, and I'll help with this, figure out a way to find people that are on the same page as us, that have the ability to do highly specific chemical testing of ocean water to tell what's in there. You know, there's probably a laboratory at a university or something like that. It's not going to be DOC people, but independent independent people.
No, they'll lose the samples.
They'll take the samples and market them as a new beverage. But something like that. But look, you've got to tell us about what happened to you a couple hours ago. And you can feel free to use the name if you want to.
Well, it's just interesting. I don't want to use names, but it's just interesting how many different kinds of people have kind of come to light since we've been on this anti-poison campaign. And I don't want to sound paranoid or
anything, but a dude came to your
house. I do suspect
someone came to your house.
There is a certain element in New Zealand that where there are pockets of resistance to poison that I think that people are probably put in as plants in those communities to try and. You look at the 1080, the anti 1080 poison image that most people have in New Zealand is of a bunch of nutters. Now, we have made it really, we've been really careful that we have come across with factual information, as factual as we can get, even though there's little research in this area. And we are level-headed, responsible adults. And the last thing that we want to do is to attach ourselves to anyone that's going to go and do something stupid or make us look stupid. So, yeah, it's pretty important that we try and be quite careful who we align ourselves with.
Yes, but someone came to your house a couple hours ago, burst in your door, trespassing, and started, they didn't physically attack you, but they started probably, verbally abusing you and question, harassing you about well, how dare you question the poison.
He started on a rant, and he was trying to go down this, we've got to do something quite radical, and I just had my suspicions that that there could be some people being used in a detrimental way to our cause. Put it
yes.
That way.
Well, let me ask you this: going a step further, who would be behind that? Who would be employing these people or sending them over?
I don't know. I imagine that there is some unbalanced people in the world, and like I said before, the anti-1080 movement in New Zealand has had a pretty rough time in the mainstream media because certain things have taken place, and I strongly suspect that they were people who are planted in those movements to make those movements look illegal and to destroy their image.
Yes, I believe that's a well-known tactic used by the different factions of the an oxymoron to call it the intelligence community. But I think they kind of specialize in that kind of thing. But it's probably just the standard tactic of any bureaucratic organization. But when you look at the fact that I'm not sure exactly who, but somebody's making a lot of money off of this stuff because otherwise they wouldn't be doing it. And it's like a council on the west coast of the South Island a few years ago invested like $500,000 to set up their own local 1080 processing facility.
Yeah, and what the hell are councils doing involved in getting involved in that sort of industry? It's crazy.
Well, but that's what they are. I mean, no offense to the Auckland Council, but the councils exist to look after their buddies. All the local businesses and contractors and industry are their friends. And so everything they do is on their behalf.
Yeah.
And anything that might threaten any of their buddies' profits or step on their toes in any way, they become, they become enemy number one.
Yeah, well, we found that over here, that in certain people's eyes we are pariahs because we dare question the mainstream narrative of poison, which is seemingly poisons are relatively safe. We know that is a barefaced lie.
DOC, I believe they actually show it in Poisoning Paradise, which is a very brilliant film, by the way. Clyde Graff, he's actually been on the council in Hamilton for the past few years. DOC employed who was at that time a well-known rugby player to do an advert for television that showed, it was about how safe 1080 is, and it showed him eating some salt and vinegar potato chips and saying that's what it broke down into, salt and vinegar. And you know, but the reality is,
yeah,
that there,
it's pretty laughable, eh?
Yes, fluorine, like its sister element uranium, is chemically what they call a bone seeker. It tends to react with the calcium, and so anything that has bones is going to uptake fluorine as well as uranium. I mean, the weapons design have known this ever since before World War
I. And I also understand that. I also understand that some of those elements, they completely deny the body to uptake iodine, which is obviously really important, particularly when you're talking about some of those toxic chemicals.
That's one of the things that bromine does, because the halogens sort of cancel. If you've got too much bromine, it might. That's exactly one of the things that bromine does in the Brodificum, this article that I sent. He talks about that, about how it can create, yeah, too much bromine can create an iodine deficiency, and that's what's behind goiter and a lot of sort of thyroid-related illnesses and stuff like that. But in fact, bromine,
which is really important.
Well, absolutely. But according to this guy, bromine is the only halogen that has no use in a healthy biological system, because iodine, fluorine, and chlorine do exist in biological organisms in small amounts. They're important.
Yeah.
Bromine has no function at all. It's nothing but a poison at any level.
Yeah. And particularly with, you know, people can say, oh, well, it's naturally occurring in the environment. But what we're talking about is dosage, and that dosage is massive, you know. So it's not really even an argument to say, hey, this stuff, you know, naturally occurs in the environment. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't occur naturally in its elemental form. When fluorine occurs in the environment, it's often bound up with calcium as fluorite or other, you know, sort of minerals and stuff like that. And there it's perfectly fine. But when we've isolated it out, all these substances, isolated them and concentrated them and then forced them to combine in ways that they never would in nature, that's what synthetic chemistry is all about. It's a totally different beast than it was in the natural environment. And that's also why there's absolutely no way, no computer simulation, no short-term study can tell you what the fate and destiny is going to be of the breakdown of 1080 in the biosphere, or the breakdown of Brodificum. All you can, you just have to use logic and common sense will tell you that no matter what it's going to do, you can't have less than the elemental quantities that I just mentioned.
Which is really scary. Yeah, and we get back to your point, which you mentioned a while ago, you know, and it's a really important topic in this issue, and that is the bioaccumulation and also the sublethal dose of these poisons is not known. So we, the humans, are walking, talking, living. Basically, we're the guinea pigs for these poisons, and so we're not going to find out, just like DDT, just like asbestos, just like all those other poisons that were around a long time ago, we're not going to know the long-term detrimental effects until another 10, 20 years when we all start dropping dead.
Well, that's if anybody actually wants to know, because it's not that now we have the ability to know, but people just don't want to. They're in denial. They get convinced to because it's a bit inconvenient. A lot of reality is a bit inconvenient for people. Yeah, like I told you before, in 1963, there was a guy, he was the top genetic toxicologist of his day. His name was Arnold Lehmann, that's Lehmann. And he was a colleague of Rachel Carson. He was head of the Food and Drug Administration and a science advisor to JFK. And in this brilliant documentary about Rachel Carson, he is interviewed and he says that if we really want to understand the long-term effects of what either radiological toxins like, you know, the fission products from a nuclear reaction or something, or the chemical mutagens and carcinogens, if we really want to understand what these are doing to our genome and our long-term health and our ancestors, we have to study at least 25 generations of people. And so you and I that are alive now, we're only the third generation to exist since all this stuff even came into being. So we're just the beginning of the experiment.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-boggling, eh?
But the most important thing is we can be very, very sure that none of this stuff is a nutrient.
Yeah.
Cool. Tony Story, thank you so much. What will your next sort of plan of action be? Are you going to try to get as many people together as possible to physically converge on the council office there on Great Barrier? Because if you did, you know, just to go there and hang out and drink some lemonade or something like that, and talk about all this stuff like a corroboree, but that would get on the Auckland TV stations.
Yeah. Well, at this stage, Jeff, it's really a waiting game because we've delivered the petition on Friday. Department of Conservation said that they would respond within 2 weeks. So we really have to wait and see and maybe have a good talk about our next plan of attack. But wouldn't it be great, hey, if the Department of Conservation said, hey, we've listened to the people, over half of the adult population. We're a democratic organisation, and we're going to listen to the people, and we reviewed the drop. We're not going to drop. We're going to trap instead. Hurrah!
Well, what if they said...
And everyone walks off into the sunset.
But there's no reason that can't happen. But on the other hand,
exactly.
what if they said, well, you know, those 400 people that signed the position, we're going to pay for their boat ticket to leave the island that day. But I also heard...
Yeah, I don't think many people would take that up.
No. I also saw a thing the other day. Maybe you can verify that DOC's already, they're planning to remove all the Wiccas from Rakitu when they do the drop.
Yeah, well, see, this is where the story gets deeper.
Exactly.
We found out on Friday that the former owners of the island who have done a deal with the Department of Conservation where they're able to still live there for the next 60 years, and good on them for doing that. But one of the family members had actually undertaken a trapping program and was in the middle of getting the rat numbers down to significant numbers. Department of Conservation, I think this happened within the last couple of years, came along and said, you have to remove those traps. Because you're obviously having quite an effect on the rat population, and it would compromise our aerial drop.
But look,
isn't that amazing?
What does that tell you? It's like they're trying to justify using the poison in the same way that I noted the synchronicity between that they want to do this on Rakitu, and they just did it on an island in Hawaii, the exact same thing. So all this is coming from something beyond the level of any certain country. It's trying. They want
it's
to spread
driven
these...
by some dark force somewhere. I know I'm going to sound completely paranoid, but I think that there's many layers to the story. Now, as far as getting to the Weka, the Weka were taken there from the mainland to Rakitu, I think it was back in 1999, because there were people on the mainland who were worried about the declining population of the Weka. So they took them to Rakitu. Now they're saying we want to get rid of them, or at least we're going to have to remove all of the Weka, and are they going to get all of the Weka? No, they're not.
Well, see,
they're going to get some of the Weka, they're going to take them to another location, and apparently then they're going to take them back after the aerial drop, after all the poison is gone.
It sounds
really fanciful, and it sounds really impractical, very costly. Quite simply, it's crazy.
It's a bunch of insanity. I think I told you that in 2009 I rang up and talked to this guy on Lord Howe Island. He was the head of the wharf there, and he was leading the resistance against a plan DEC of New South Wales, who administers Lord Howe, they wanted to do a similar thing on Lord Howe. They wanted to gather up all the birds and animals that they wanted, put them in a cage and take them away, and nuke the whole place with Brodificum, but leaving all the people there, and then put the animals back. And this guy made two points. He said, like, Jeff, you know, there's a few rats, but they're not nearly as bad as they're making out to be. It's not even a problem. And he made the point, too, that anytime you deploy all these poisons, you're not going to kill. You might kill a lot of what you're aiming for, and you're also going to kill a lot of other species that are not targeted. But you're not going to kill all the ones that are targeted, and the ones that survive are going to develop a resistance to it.
That's right. Yep. There's resistance to any poison, and that's why over here certain poisoners who poison, I'm not going to name any names, but they have to continually rotate the poison because of that poison resistance that builds up.
Absolutely. There could be these genetically engineered rodents from DARPA might actually be able to use the poison as a nutrient and grow really big and strong like Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're the Terminators.
The size of cats.
They're the Terminators. I mean, who knows? But that is what Monsanto specializes in. They supposedly are creating a new strain of honeybee that's synthetically genetically engineered and that is not affected by poisons or by glyphosate anyway.
Yeah.
So they want.
I wonder whether the poison industry, because you know there's so many people now becoming aware of poisons like Roundup around the world, and I wonder if that poison is actually in decline, and so these people are scrambling around to have a look to see where other poisons can be produced and manufactured and used. And I'm wondering if this whole poison-free 2050 is just another way to keep the poison industry bumped up to a certain level.
Well, it is, but I think that a big part of it, it's not even just about selling poisons to make money, but it's about the necessity of getting some kind of poisons out there in order to assist the long-standing agenda of depopulation of humanity.
Exactly. Yeah, we've talked about that privately before. And so I think I said poison-free 2050 before. I meant predator-free 2050, which is this ongoing ridiculous campaign that the government, the national government anyway, we're behind. Labor government, I'm not so sure, but I think it definitely was derived from the likes of politicians like Maggie Barry, who were quite big on this predator-free 2050. In fact, they established a couple of companies to actively promote this crazy scheme.
I'm sure. Well, now how about this? Now this is all tongue in cheek for anybody that might actually take it seriously. But the Jacinta Ardern administration has launched the Zero Carbon Act. Carbon is the most ultimate deadly toxin ever to exist. It's just a coincidence that it happens to be what we're all made of. So that actually zero carbon literally means zero life.
Carbon and water. Stop breathing for 24 hours or what? How is that achieved?
Well, no, that's just carbon dioxide. We're actually made of carbon. If you took the carbon out of your body, if you took out the carbon in the water, you'd be almost invisible. So every living thing is made primarily of carbon and water and a few other elements. So literally zero carbon.
Zero humans.
No, not just humans, anything that's alive. So the only way to have zero carbon is to take every living thing and ship it to another planet.
So is this some sort of E.T.'s grand scheme to create another Mars on planet Earth?
Well, I don't know. It might be in some of their minds, but I do think there's factions of people that at the highest levels of wealth and control of these covert research organizations, and they control massive amounts of money. So because of that, they can get most people to do anything they want, whether they know about it or not. I think that's how it all works. But I do think that there's a whole element of what's called transhumanism. There's these people. One of the leading proponents is this guy named Ray Kurzweil. He's like the human guru of the New World Order. But they think that they're going to transform themselves into these beings that are transhuman. They're not actually alive, and that they're going to live forever. But he's taking all these drugs and genetic engineering and nanotechnology and stuff like that. And I compare it with Elon Musk, the guy, the entrepreneur of Tesla cars and SpaceX, and he wants to go and live on Mars. But you know, I wrote a parody about him a few weeks ago about how he was going to spend $700 trillion to buy the entire U.S. military and use it to wage war on climate change. Because, logically, if there's no climate, there cannot be any climate change. And so the only way to get rid of climate is to get rid of the entire atmosphere of the Earth. So that was his goal. He was going to terraform the whole planet and get rid of the atmosphere, thereby ridding us of climate change. And just the fact that there no life forms would survive, that's just some collateral damage, because they'll be fine. They'll be living on Mars.
Yeah. It's like this. There's like this crazy notion with the pro-poisoners who they're so hell-bent on retaining biodiversity in New Zealand that they want to destroy the environment as to which the biodiversity lives and thrives in. It kind of doesn't make sense.
Man, thank you so much. Thanks for your brilliant work there, and I hope that you can. Do you have like a single mailing list that you can communicate with everybody that's like maybe that signed the petition or something, so people have?
I think the Facebook Aotea Poison Free 2020 is probably the best contact.
Okay, that's cool. And so
if you just go on there and have a look. Yeah.
Yes. And so what about the people that live on Rakitu? Are they still there? And
They were the people that gave us the information about the one of the family members trying to save the rats, and also apparently one of the granddaughters of the family was we didn't know this, but a few years ago was circulating a petition in Auckland. It's a shame we didn't all connect up.
We're doing our best, man, but we've got to, you know, and it's symbolic making an effort like this, not even
exactly.
Just stopping it in one place, but it's like, you know.
It is symbolic, and it actually makes a difference in the universe, too.
Absolutely, but at least everybody in New Zealand didn't get a phone call on their mobile phone 2 days ago telling them that a nuclear missile was incoming.
Fucking crazy, eh?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, why don't we get Greenpeace to go out there in some of their little rubber boats with some flags?
Fucking, you know what? Greenpeace actually, half of them support, like the Green Party, half of them support 1080, mate.
But of course they do. What do you expect from those people? It should actually be called.
Yeah, crazy shit.
It should actually call them Greypeace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Kia ora, my brother.
Okay, Kia ora,
hey,
man.
Let me leave you with this. Hey, Wahi Tapu. Wahi Arahi Mai.
What does that mean?
Inyata Hora. It means a sacred place of guidance from the whales and dolphins. That's what I think of Aotea as.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you go out to Rakitu, mate, you'll be blown away by the sacredness of that place.
Let's kayak out there when I come back.
Yeah, or we'll take a boat.
Yes, that would be fun. Well, let's do that, and I'll film an interview with you there.
Awesome.
Okay, thanks, man. Bye.
Thank you.